And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the season finale of Voices from the Grid. I'm Michael Lindenbaum, and I am joined with by
the fabulous and ever delightful and always snarky Sasha Kaplan.
Brian.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? It's Brian Massey. And Ben is just...
And the fuck amused by his own self. It's me.
Hey, man, if you can't laugh at yourself, I mean...
It's Ben Taylor.
What's the point?
He can be the Power Rangers official laugh track by himself.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure I could be, to be honest. There's a lot of laughable stuff in season one, that's for sure.
And welcome to our season one finale of Voices from the Grid, where we're all adults talking about the kids show Power Rangers and taking it way too seriously. So with that, we've all survived season one. I think everyone should just get a round of applause for that one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Thank God.
That was way too many episodes. I'm sorry.
It's not an easy watch, is it?
You know, it's funny because, like, I talked about this on previous episodes that, like, I remember watching season one when I was a kid in Russia in, like, 1996 or something. And, like, I remember enjoying it. And then I remember revisiting some of the episodes when my brother was little. And I was like, okay, this is kind of cheesy, but, you know. And then you watch it as an adult and you realize this is, like, one of the worst seasons of Power Rangers ever. It's still not as bad as Megaforce, but it's still
pretty bad. We've all gotten there, thankfully. So,
aren't you lucky?
Megaforce or Super Megaforce?
Yeah, same shit.
Same thing, different day. But so with that, we're gonna hop right into it. We're gonna start off by ranking the Rangers minus Tommy, because I know how everyone feels about Tommy. Ben just did the finger snap in disappointment. So
now, I'm not going to lie to you, and I said this to Sasha and Brian pointed out earlier. When I was making my notes for this last night about ranking the Rangers, I legit forgot Tommy was part of this season. I only ranked 5 Rangers.
Ow.
So I guess, should we clarify how we're ranking them? Is this by, like, how much we enjoyed the character?
I think it's by your own personal rankings. Like, okay. how you valued the Rangers to the team itself.
Yeah. Like, okay. I was gonna say, because, like, if that's the case, then if we're not doing that, then whoops, I gotta go wrap my notes again. So
fair. Oh well, starting with that, Brian, you're going first now.
Oh, great, cool. Awesome. All right, so I ranked the Rangers, and I'll go ahead and say number 5, unfortunately, is going to be Trini. It's not that I don't love her. I think she's an awesome character. But as far as episodes that I watched anyways, and keep in mind when we're going through this, this is just going to be episodes that I reviewed on the show. And I did watch a handful of them as well. But this is just based on stuff that I saw. Trini, while I love her, and I think that she was an awesome Ranger, while she did do a few things, I don't feel like she was the most impactful Ranger this season at all, which you could argue that, you know, she was, sure. That's just how I feel about that. Number 4 for me is going to be Kimberly. You know, she's still kind of in her, like, Valley Girl phase at this point. She's kind of like, I don't know. She's not as important here as she's going to be later on, I feel like. Like, because I've seen season 2 and 3. She's number 4 for me at this point. Number 3 is Jason. I think he had a bunch of really good episodes. He's probably the most steadfast Ranger. He didn't really go through too many extremes, and I know that in season 2 he's going to have, like, a lot more, like, to do in that season. Number 2 for me was Zach. Dude was trying so hard with Angela. And, like, I was so happy that at, like, you know, episode 60, he finally got that kiss and all that. And I thought, you know, also, he was probably one of the most enjoyable Rangers this season. I really liked him. But then my number 1 is Billy. I honestly think Billy's the most important Ranger of all time. I think Billy, I would argue that him, Zordon, and Alpha are, like, the reason why the Rangers are as successful as they are. Because without him, you know, like, they just kind of, I don't know, they're not as successful. What do y'all think?
Also, let's be fair. Dude invented a flying car.
Yeah.
Act. I think we can, I mean, I can't speak for you, Ben, but did you, I also have had Billy as number one.
No.
No. I guess I'll go next then.
Sasha, go first, because you have Billy at number one.
All right, so I'll go from the bottom up, I guess, even though you all know number one. At the bottom for me was actually Kimberly. I thought she was the single most annoying character this entire season. Oh my God. She had a few good moments. Like in the trick or treat episode, she was fine. Like when she was mentoring that girl for a cheerleading tryouts, her niece or cousin or whatever. What, and it's cool that like we saw the fact that like she speaks sign, she knows sign language and things like that. But I just found her completely annoying and whiny, and it's just like it's just unnecessary. Next for me is Zach. Not because I don't love Zach. I think he's an amazing character, but just like. I think a lot of his episodes were kind of, I felt like there was more that could have been done with him than what it was. Like him chasing after Angela, I thought was absolutely unnecessary and boring as all hell. I liked the episode where he does the magic tricks for the kids to keep them distracted from all of the like ranger fighting. And he's an awesome dancer. Like, oh my God. Jason is next because he was technically like the quid pro quo leader. He was the one that was like constant, he's like the never give up, never surrender guy. Then you have Trini for me. Trini's number two, because I think although she didn't get as many episodes that developed her as a character, I would argue that in a lot of ways she didn't need them. I think she was already a very strong and steadfast character. She was definitely my favorite character growing up. Just because I thought she was always like super cool. And I think if we're going off how the show worked, then you needed a character like Trini. First of all, her friendship with Billy was amazing. And the fact that she was always there to assist Billy with his, with a lot of his inventions, but she was also there to translate, you know, this fake science, which a lot of it was very fake science. So Billy is number one for me. Because he did invent the communicators. We did see him working with Zordon and Alpha to upgrade weapons. I think we see more of that in the later seasons than we did this season. But Billy is the best.
All right.
What's your ranking, Mike?
So for my ranking, I almost was about to yell at Sasha to get out of my head because we only flipped two of the Rangers.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, do tell.
So for number five, I have Kim. I think while she, near the end of the season, or actually at two points in the beginning of the season before Agreeing with Evil, she actually is a valuable part for like two episodes, like Foul Play in the Sky and two episodes before that, because she actually, when she uses her bow actually destroys the monster to finish the fight completely. So she has those two moments, really, and then like as you brought up with Trick or Treat, you know, how... it's that realization of like, oh, you had this opportunity to do something, but then you had to lose out because of your responsibilities as a ranger. She was able to kind of help convey that message, which is actually kind of an important message, especially growing up, as we have all kind of learned, you know. Number four, I have Zach as well. I actually enjoyed the Angela storyline because it was a good arc for Zach, because
there was nothing wrong with him liking Angela. There was a problem with him sexually harassing her, which is what he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah, the sexual harassment side was bad, but it conveyed though how it can be sometimes in high school. You try to chase like the popular girl or something like that, and it kind of gives off that a little bit. But
right, but for that to happen occasionally would be fine, right?
Like one or two episodes max.
Yeah, yeah, but it's literally his thing.
Yeah. But then outside that, even though he kind of came off as like a second leader at times to Jason, his was more individually motivated rather than team motivated. because we've seen it with specifically the Angela episodes, where things are going good for him, then he has to go. He's not thinking about the team. He's thinking about himself, so he could try to get back to being with Angela. So that's why I kind of like, he's technically like in a way second command, but he's not the type of leader like the way Jason is, which I'll get to in a moment. Number three for me is Trini. This is where the flip is. So I have Trini at three, pretty much for all for the exact same reasons as Sasha. If it wasn't for the relationship between Trini and Billy, Trini may have been actually much, much lower on this list for me. Because she's the one who, like, when Billy creates the communicator, she's the one who translates it into, you know, a much more easier way of understanding for the others, or anytime he does something like that. Then I have Jason. In all truth and honesty, Jason is the true leader of the team. And I really like the fact that, like, there are times where he takes it seriously to the point where, you know, he kind of beats himself up on it because he wants to do the best job that he can for the team. And I actually kind of like that because, you know, like, I'm pretty sure, like, everyone has gone through those moments where they're given the opportunity to lead a team and stuff like that, and you want the best for your team. And like I said with Zach, he was more individually motivated. Zach or Jason was more like, hey, you know, once he started figuring it out, he became that team type leader rather than thinking about individually. And then number one, I got Billy. I think we've all said it. If it ain't for Billy, this team falls apart. I mean, he creates the communicators, he creates the rad bug, he's able to fix the command center, he's able to fix Alpha when Alpha gets, you know, hacked. He's able to do things that just any other Ranger just couldn't do. And it shows in the future seasons that we're going to be reviewing, because, you know, he's just invaluable. You can't replace Billy.
I completely agree.
So Ben. All
right. Ben.
So I'm just shocked you all went for people from this season, because my number six is Ethan James from Dino Thunder Blue. My number five is Taylor Earhart from Wild Force Yellow. My number three is my number four is Adam Park, which is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 2 Black. My number three is Bridge Carson, SPD Green. My number two is Jen Scott, Time Force Pink. And my number one is Carter Grayson, Lightspeed Rescue Red.
Well, if we're going to do that, then why don't I just go ahead and say my number one's Barai from Zio Ranger.
That's a joke. I just wanted to do a take on different colors from other seasons.
That was good. I like that. Although I resent the fact that Carter's number one a little bit, but go for it. Go for it.
He was the only Red Ranger that would have been on my list, so...
I mean, the guy drove a motorcycle into a monster. Let's just be brutally honest here.
Like, the very first thing he thinks when he sees a monster is, look, I could shoot it, or I could run it over in my SUV.
I can do both.
Practical thinking. So, for me, personally, Trini is number five. If it wasn't for her playing Jean-Luc Picard... She's a complete waste of a character.
You know,
let me explain that for a moment.
Sorry, I just wanted to say real fast, I never thought I would hear that comparison, but it makes sense.
Right. So it's the Jean-Luc Picard factor, right? In Star Trek The Next Generation, whenever Geordi and Data would go off on there, we can fire a tachyon beam through the deflector dish to destabilize the Jean-Luc Picard would be like, and what does that mean? So they would have to re-explain it to the audience, right? She literally existed at first to explain Billy's nonsense. And they thought, well, if we're not going to make another genius to take away from Billy's shtick, how can we explain that she knows what he's talking about? Oh, we'll just make her Asian. Casual 90s racism. Because Asian people are clever, remember? And other than that, she's utterly one-dimensional, right? She wouldn't exist if it weren't to be a cipher for Billy, right?
Yeah.
And then they just use her for everything else that doesn't fit the other four Rangers. It's not her character evolving. It's like, well, we want to do this story, and we've established the other four characters better, so Trini, I guess? It's not like she comes out... Like, when we reviewed Cleanup Crew, right? And they're all like, oh, Trini's made this excellent video. She's never shown any interest in television medium before. She's just there to be the person that can do things that other Rangers don't do.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what she's there for. My number four is Billy on this rewatch. Billy was my favorite character growing up. I always gravitated towards the clever characters. However, on this rewatch, I just found him embarrassing. And I'm not looking at this through rose-tinted glasses like a lot of the others are, because I've only really gotten into Power Rangers in the last year. Right, I don't remember a whole lot of it from when I was younger. It aired quite weird at weird hours in the UK, so I didn't catch all the episodes when they first came out. So I'm actually watching a lot of this stuff for the first time as a 42-year-old man. Right, and Billy as a character is horrible. Right, he's the stereotypical geek, which, let's be honest, is what they were going for. Doesn't make it good, right? My number three character is Jason. Because if it isn't karate, he doesn't care. He's so single-minded. And sometimes that's a good thing, but it just, there's not nothing. It's not till he comes, it's literally not till he comes back in Zeo that we see him do anything other than karate. And when he does come back, he reforms a biker woman. It's like, really? Like, this again, going to the time capsule episode. I can't remember what it's called. But there's a episode where they put stuff in the time capsule. He's like, I'm going to put in a karate trophy because it shows what you can do when you train your body and mind. I'm like, no, it doesn't. It's got no context at all. It's just like, check it out as a trophy.
Yeah.
Jason is, but at least he's the reason why Jason ranks higher than Billy and higher than Trini. He's not a cipher like Trini was. He's not a bad stereotype like Billy was. He's the prototypical jock that's not a jock. And it's a little bit of an inversion, and I quite like that. Number two for me is Zach, just because... Well, it was kind of a process of elimination at this point. And he's got a better, more defined personality than the other three. But I still found him really weird at times. Like, it's very interesting to me that he's supposed to be the Team Lothario and gives everyone dating advice, and they get shut down at every turn by every woman he ever speaks to, ever. Ever. Ever, 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 ever. Like, that man is never getting a date. Ever.
And, And then you see like an episode like Peace, Love, and Woe where he's trying to give advice to Billy, and all Billy has to do is just walk through a door and accidentally bump into a girl.
And then really, Billy has more game than Jason.
Zach, yeah.
No. Billy has the most game on the team. Of all the people in Power Rangers, he has the most love interests. Because all of his love interests only last one episode, and then they disappear again.
I mean,
it's why I would have thought it would have been really interesting if they wanted to, when they introduced Kat in season two, I was like, season three. I was like, they should at least, rather than force a relationship with her and Tommy, who have no chemistry together,
right?
Get her with Billy because you've been trying to hook him up for three seasons. But Billy, anyway. And by a sheer process of elimination, my number one ranger is Kim.
Oh, that's so sad.
Just by a sheer process of elimination. She's the one with the most defined character. She's the one with the most developed character. And she's the one that just isn't as bad as the other ones. And I think that's my problem in general, is all of them are bad. It's which ones are least bad than the others.
I think a lot of this is something that I've noticed a lot of these like nostalgia shows in the 90s tend to suffer from. It's that like you were saying, Ben, it's like the stereotyping of like the smart Asian character, the stereotypical nerd, the semi-stereotypical jock.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of, which is, I guess, maybe why our rankings are different, because part of me was also thinking of, like, the 90s context.
Yeah.
At least a little bit. So I didn't mind a lot of the things that, like, I think bugged you, at least in the same way.
That's why it's cool to have our different viewpoints, right?
Oh, like, absolutely.
Yeah. If I could butt in for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
So like you're watching this for the first time like this. I was literally there from like day one as a 6-year old watching this show. So I can't disconnect my, you know, rose colored glasses. At least, well, here's the thing. I can see your point. Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, just having this conversation, like hearing you say it like that, I'm going like, oh my God, he's actually right about this. But even like so far as me writing my notes prior to this meeting, I was like, well, you know, what do I remember of these characters and how do I, but.
And that's the thing, I'm not saying you guys are wrong in your opinions.
No, right? By all means.
And that's the cool thing, is because we will bring, and it's the Sex and the City Ninja Turtles theory.
When did that crossover happen? Holy crap.
Okay, so.
There's
this theory that like the characters in Sex and the City and the characters in the Ninja Turtles and the characters in like Ghostbusters, everyone's got their own favorites because they all embody a different thing.
Yeah.
Right. It's like the humors as well. It all fits that same sort of, and Power Rangers fits directly into that. Right. You've got the sporty one, the smart one, the girly one, the Lothario. And Trini.
I just like how you just go, and Trini.
What's her thing? The Asian one, I guess.
Lothario, Jock, Asian.
Anyway, I'm belaboring the point now. Like, it's very interesting to see. All right, I've got to ask the question. If we were including him, where would Tommy be on everyone's lists?
At like, okay, so
number 10, Tommy Oliver.
Okay, so we rank them like, you know, 1 through 5. Okay, yeah. So you have, my ranking still stays the same. It's just there's a very large gap at the bottom.
Yeah.
And as you get all the way down to the bottom, after you count all of the teachers and all of the side characters and Bulk and Skull, you get Tommy. And like,
wow.
But if Bulk and Skull were on the list, they'd be number 1 and 2.
True. Yeah, that's very true.
But anyway. My issue with Tommy is that, like...
We're not talking about the issues with Tommy. We'll get to Tommy.
Like,
I just want to know where he would rank on your tops.
He's at the bottom for me. I don't think he had a very definitive personality, but without, like, I'm Karate Man and I'm a foil for Jason and I'm Kimberly's boyfriend. The worst character we will ever have in Power Rangers. And I think part of the hatred that, like, I have for him is that is kind of like what happens later. Mm-hmm. Not so much what happens this season, but looking at the season as a whole, he's the character that goes through the, you can see it coming. And he's the character that goes through the most, which, like, certain things would have been cool if they had happened maybe, like, to a different character. Mm-hmm. Obviously not Green with Evil, but, like, what was it? Maybe, like, instead of the green candle, it was a different ranger that was losing his powers. That would have been, I think, an interesting element. Like, I think it made, like, on the one hand, it was, like, Rita getting pissy because, you know, Tommy was a good guy now. But it would have been cooler if she'd actually gone after Jason. But I guess there was only one candle and it just happened to be the green color.
Well, and both...
Where does he rank on yours, Brian?
Be honest. So, okay, there's kid me ranking and then there's me ranking it, like adult me.
No. Go with the same way you would have written your notes for the list that you gave us.
I ranked it, number six was Trini, then number five was Tommy, and then number four was Kimberly, and then so on. I ranked Tommy as five because A, his character development doesn't really happen until season two or three. Also, you know, even though he's there, he's not really there because of a few things. One, because there's a lot of back behind the scenes stuff that happened where he just wasn't on the show either because of, you know, a lack of footage or because of a contract dispute, whatever. But he just wasn't really that prevalent. I mean, the Dragon Zord stuff is cool, but, like, as a character, he's just not really, you know, that prevalent in the show for season one. So I had him as number five. I would probably say season two, he's number one because of so much stuff that happens. But, like, we're not talking about season two right now.
Yeah. And then also, to real quick, before I go to where I put him, you know, to kind of piggyback off of what you were saying, Sasha, both Brian and I have actually watched the Sentai that Mighty Morphin's based off of. And the green candle actually plays a big part in Jew Ranger.
Yes.
I mean, given the Sentai footage that was used, that would make sense. Because, like, it was very, like, the acting you could tell was really good. It seemed like it was going somewhere else than where it ended up.
But. And the one thing, and we're actually going to touch base on this in season two, is with Zed, he actually does create candles for other rangers.
Yeah.
So, but we've been into that when we did the Green Candle episode. You and I went into that with, like, but how?
Yeah, but like I was telling, you know, to piggyback off of Sasha's point, in the Sentai, the Green Candle actually plays a big part.
But in the Sentai,
the character.
And I think you have to correct me on this because you're a Sentai expert, Brian. Doesn't the Green Candle not actually represent its powers? It's just a measure of time.
Basically, I guess Rita commissions this candle or something, and so Barai in Zeo Ranger has to stay in this room. It's like the hyperbolic time chamber from Dragon Ball Z, basically, as long as he's in this room, time will not pass. But if he leaves the room, the candle will begin to burn more.
Right.
And it stops burning once he goes back in that room, which is why when you watch Zeo Ranger, there are, like, large swaths of episodes where Green just does not show up. But then, like, you know, let's say Geki and the gang are just, like, really, you know, strapped for time, or they're not able to beat a monster. Barai will show up, but, like, it's enforced, and it's definitely told in the context of the show. It's like he's literally sacrificing his life to save his brother.
Yeah, and the Power Ranger concept to that was that every time Tommy used the powers, it would drain.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it was.
I guess we couldn't go too dark.
No, it was going to drain anyway. Just when he was closer to it, it drained quicker.
Yeah.
Super Sentai, people die.
Yep. I wanted to bring that point up. I actually have Tommy probably around 4, 5-ish, like somewhere in there. You know, for the kind of the same reasons, he's not fully developed in this season, like he will be in the next season coming up. So Ben, where would you put him?
I actually have him at number 3. Because he's not as egregious as Trini, Billy, and Jason. Basically.
As much smack as you have talked.
Damn.
No. Again, the thing about, and I say this in my column that I wrote for the website, to paraphrase CM Punk's infamous pipe bomb, I don't hate Tommy. I hate the idea that he's the best. Right?
That's fair.
Tommy has his role. He has his place. He has his time. But he's deified. He's gone through this apotheosis for Power Rangers fans that he's the God Ranger. And he's there's Ranger, yeah. Just no evidence that makes him any better than any other Ranger other that he's gotten more opportunities to do it. Look at Adam. And I know every time I bring this up, someone's like, wait, really? Adam is just as good of a Ranger as Tommy. I would go so far as to say he's a better character than Tommy. Tommy's main character development isn't character development, it's character change, right? Mm-hmm. His personality doesn't change. His mannerisms don't change. His actions don't change. He's the same person all the way through. Things just happen to him. Adam, in the space of next season alone, has confidence issues. He overcomes those. He learns how to speak to women. That's a conversation for next season's ending.
Yeah.
The point is, Tommy has a place in this season that is very important, and I can't deny that, right? Plain and simple. As much as I don't like Tommy as a character, and as much as I hate the idea that he's the best, he's also a more formed character than Trini. He's a more formed character than Billy, and he's a more formed character than Jason. And I've just got to face that, whether I like it or not.
Yeah. So I think he serves a purpose in the role that he's in.
Yes.
But as a character by himself, without the suit, he doesn't really contribute that much in the sense, like, other than, like, yes, he's part of the group. Yeah, he's Kimberly's boyfriend. But he's mostly, I feel, just there to kind of annoy Jason. And, like...
Right, but when he goes after, like, Green Candle and during that break, he's actually... His character does something, right?
Fine.
Okay. He has to at least deal with... and they don't do it very well, right? Like, there's no actual him sitting there being like, man, I'm not a superhero anymore. But he does, there's at least that scene with him and Kim where he's like, well, I'm getting on. Which is kind of the best I can expect right now. He at least has to deal with some adversity in the season.
Yeah.
That's fair. I'll revise my ranking because I found Ben's argument to be very convincing. I will put him, I would ninth. Say after Jason, but before Zach on my list.
Okay.
I'm
still towards the bottom, but.
I will say I lost track of, like, in, like, the second half of the season, how many times he would say, like, you guys go on, I'll catch up.
Yeah. Or, like, when he shows up at the end for a quick cameo, like, remember, he still exists.
Oh, right, he is in this episode.
Yeah. So, moving on, let's take a look at the villains. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to ask you guys how you ranked these four specific villains.
Okay.
Goldar, Babu, right. Scorpina, and Squat. I'm not asking you to rank Rita. I'm not asking you to rank Finster or the Putties or individual monsters within themselves, because that kind of plays an effect in our favorite episodes in a way. So, like, I'll actually start because I know I could see everyone just jotting down their notes. So I'll go first while you guys are jotting. Number four, I have Squat. For Squat, I think he was just a lot more comedy relief of the villains, mostly paired with like Babu. It's also kind of ironic that Babu and Squat have the same initials as Bulk and Skull.
Well, that was intentional, right?
I don't know if it was ever done intentional, but if it was, that was smart on that one. Squat, I just never... I think he had like one episode where he actually did something of actual value. Other than that, he's always just been kind of like the bumbling idiot or the creeper. Like that one episode where he was creeping on Kim's bed.
Were we watching the same show?
I just never thought Squat was the greatest.
Okay.
Personally, yeah.
He ate those Goonie Bird eggs.
Yeah.
He's like a low tier minion, like a higher tier minion, but like low tier general.
No, just when he says that there's only one episode where Squat does something, I can think of three off the top of my head.
That I agree with Ben on. Yeah.
I can't remember all 60 episodes.
Was that Squat or Babu that sabotaged the mind reading device?
That was Squat. That was the one I was thinking of.
And then he pours the sleeping juice into Uncle Steve's drink during foul play. Squat does quite a lot.
Yeah.
He's just good at following orders.
Yeah. Next up, I have Scorpina. I thought Scorpina was, and it stinks because there just wasn't enough footage for her for the Sentai to be able to utilize her more. But I thought she was actually pretty formidable. She was using a good like secondary general role to Goldar, because be honest, Goldar was the real top minion to Rita. I enjoyed seeing her, especially the fact that she had the ability to take on human form, and then when she grew large, take on a legitimate monster form. And I always thought that
is something that will be it's something that will come up again in Power Rangers.
Yeah. So it actually was the first time we ever got to see that in Power Rangers, and was actually kind of cool, and I always enjoyed that. Next up, I have Babu. I always liked Babu because he was always like, you know, always thinking up of ways that he could try to get to the Rangers to always get like Rita's approval. And like, we saw that with Power Ranger Punks when he spikes the drinks that makes Kim and Billy, you know, the punks. He's always trying to do that. He's also come up with, like, he's actually forced Finster to, like, make monsters for him and, like, send them down and try to beat the Rangers when Rita's not in the picture. So he was always thinking. He was always trying to do something to try to help Rita. He wouldn't succeed, but he had some really good moments. And then, obviously, Goldar, the person who had the most voice changes in a single season than Zordon did. But no, I always liked Goldar. I always thought you could tell that he was definitely the number one to Rita. And for me, he was the one character you could also tell that Rita actually cared the most about, because you'd see her send him out to battle, and just when you think that he's going to see his fate come to an end, Rita pulls him back and goes, "No, you're going to fight another day." She always wants to keep Goldar around. And I think that speaks levels to Goldar's value as, you know, as one of her henchmen generals, whatever you want to call it.
I feel this is a little unfair. Like, if you want me to rank these four, it's actually quite easy. but that's because you can just go by the amount of screen time they had.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, number four is Scorpina. She's by far the single wasted, most wasted, or for me at least, the single most wasted opportunity in season one of Power Rangers. They could have done some really cool stuff with Scorpina. Instead, you have an episode like, I think, you have certain episodes. There's an episode that I reviewed, and I can't remember which one it is, where they make this big deal like, ha, Scorpina will lead this assault on the Rangers. And then she literally does nothing. She doesn't appear in the rest of the episode. Yeah. And you're like, but what?
This doesn't make sense.
Number one is Goldar, because he had the most screen time, right? Like, they used him the most. He did the most things. Therefore, and then there's Squat and Babu in the middle. Arrange them as you will, because they're a double act.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I kept Finster out was simply because Finster, he was just the monster maker. When I was thinking about this.
Is that fair? No, no, hang on. Is that fair? Because the three of you all ranked Billy at number one because he was the brains behind the operation. And technically, Finster is behind the brains behind the operation of Rita's team.
He's got a point.
I agree with that. Not to mention that oftentimes Rita was the one that like, we need a monster. And Finster was like, well, actually, my queen, I have this monster that is just ready and perfect.
I have this monster book ready for you.
Like Finster, there were times where Rita would tell Finster what kind of a monster she wanted, but there was also times where Finster would tell her like, hey, like the armadillo.
Yeah.
Like Socadillo. Yeah.
Whatever. it's just a giant arm. It's just a freaking armadillo that had battery issues.
Crunchy on the outside, smooth on the inside. Armadillos.
So, you know, that was Finster's monster. Yep. It wasn't Rita's monster. I think that's also why the comics actually utilized more of Finster and gave him more development, because he's really actually kind of interesting. I think he is the most interesting of the generals. Like, Goldar is formidable, but does anybody care about Goldar's backstory? I don't. But Finster was interesting. In terms of the rankings, to be honest, I don't care about any of them, like, except Goldar. Like, Scorpina had the most potential, and like Ben said, she was the biggest waste of space. Like, you could have done so much with her. You could have had her go undercover and, like, infiltrate the Rangers. And because, you know, she had that human form that she could have utilized. But they never did anything with her. She was just kind of there for sassy remarks occasionally.
Now, I know Brian's going to bring up the Sentai.
Go for it, Brian.
So, okay, and here's where the term wasted potential just comes into play. All the things that you're talking about with Scorpina and having, like, wasted potential and all this stuff, they did this stuff in the Japanese version, because like she did go undercover. I know that there's an episode with May, the Pink Ranger in Zero Ranger, where I think she like befriends her or something, and she's like trying to get her to like, you know, change her mind on something or whatever. And then like, you know, there's this giant fight or whatever. But they also dive a lot into her and Goldar's relationship, and like, you know, as time goes on, you know, spoilers, man, they have a
right.
Yeah, they get married. They have a kid together.
They're actually married from the moment that you actually get introduced to them in the Sentai.
Yeah, so it's like,
because like a lot of stuff, like so, remember in certain episodes of Power Rangers,
for those you guys can't see this because we're recording on audio, but Sasha's reaction to that is visceral.
But
I am just disturbed slightly by this.
But the thing is, though, is that, if you ever notice in Power Rangers when you see Goldar and Scorpina bickering, that's from the Sentai of them bickering as husband and wife.
Wait.
Literally.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Okay, hold on. My because like I didn't watch the entire season, full disclosure, but I remember, I don't know if it's in this season or in the second season, so you guys can correct me. Wasn't there like a little kid that appears at one point? Maybe it's next season, because it's like I remember something between Scorpina and
Is that
a
where
kid.
Justin came from? Is that why he doesn't have a mom?
Oh, still. No,
definitely not.
I don't remember. We'll find out once I start watching season two. But
okay. So thank you for that context. I'm traumatized for life now.
Because the end of Jew Ranger is actually them being put back in the dumpster like it is at the beginning of season one in a way for Rita. Or season two, I mean.
Be somebody else's problem later.
But the thing is, though, is that you have, like, all of them in there. I mean, obviously, they did some changes for the American because Lord Zedd's an American-made villain. And they had to put people around him to surround him with. But in the Sentai, when they ended it, they put everyone back in the dumpster with Rita.
Yep.
And you see Rita, or you see Scorpina walking up with Golgar to Rita with a baby in her arms. So.
Suffice to say, I know they were constrained by Sentai footage, right? But they got certain other costumes. If they could have got Scorpina's costume and recast her, they could have done some really interesting things.
Which they tried to do in season two, because they had cast Sabrina Liu to actually be the body actor for Scorpina.
Yeah.
And they actually do an undercover thing with Scorpina. And actually with Adam of all characters. So
they could have done, like, it would have been really nice to see her do some stuff with like have her be one of Billy's love interests.
Yeah.
Right? Only to find out she's a giant scorpion lady. Would have been really
still better than the Aquator thing.
Yeah, at least it would have sounded like David Yost.
Fact.
To go back to my original point that kicked all of this off, I think it's unfair to leave Finster out.
Yeah.
All right, that's fair. I'm not.
What would your ranking be, Brian?
Pretty much the same. I'm gonna say. So, number five for me is... Actually, no, hold on. Okay, so number four for me is Scorpina, just because, again, they don't have much for her. I would say number three is going to be Babu and Squat, again, because they're a double act, like we said before. And I'm really not going to say anything that hasn't already been said. Here, but yeah, they were a double act. Can't really have one without the other. Number two is going to be Goldar, and number one's going to be Finster, because now we have Finster in here, and yeah, I've thought that since day one. Finster, it's like, you know, who's going to make the putties? Who's going to make the monsters? You know, he's without Finster. He's the guy that's like, forget Rita. Finster is the source of all the Rangers' troubles, because it's like Rita can throw a stick down there, be all angry and spy on them all they want to, but like without Finster making putty after putty after putty after putty after super putty after putty, you know, like, you know, you wouldn't have all these disturbances in the park and all that. And
you know, you brought up a really good point real quick about the putties and the super putties. So we actually talk about this, it's particularly before Green with Evil. You don't have the super putties until a much later time in the season. But yet we have super putties in the beginning part of the season.
Because, again, episodes out of order, shenanigans, things not making any sense. And thank God that this is a problem that future seasons correct.
Let's also be honest. This is the season where they didn't know that this was going to blow up the way it did.
This is true. This is the experimental season. So I guess with that, is this the part where we start talking about Rita as a villain?
Sure.
Oh my lord.
How did everyone like Rita?
I liked her as a character because she was kind of fun in like a crazy way, but as a villain, she's terrible. Like,
you could say that about most villains in Power Rangers.
Fine, then when we get there, I will repeat myself.
Okay.
But we're just from season one, like even as a kid, I was always confused by her because like, why couldn't she like stage a massive invasion of the Earth with a bunch of putties? Like most people wouldn't be, well, never mind, maybe not the putties, but like there were so many things she could have done and except like there were moments where she had good ideas. And like when she trapped the Rangers on the Island of Illusion, the concept behind it was brilliant. Leave them on the island and like forget about them and then like go invade the Earth because they're your biggest obstacle. But no, like a lot of the time, the plots were, her villain was just like, I'm going to spy on the Rangers. And oh, like, and everything that they do has to reflect the monster. It was ridiculous. And again, children's show, it has like, it's fine, but they were just pointless when you're trying to stop an invasion of the Earth. We also never saw her, like, from what we see from other villains, like, she never gathered resources, really. She never actually figured out, like when she lands on the moon, on the Earth from the moon, that would have been a really cool, like, three-parter that, like, actually arguably could have been, like, a season finale in some extent. But she just doesn't do that much. Like, there's so much more that could have been done with her as a villain. And she resorted to these quickie, like, boring 5-year-old villain plots.
Yeah.
At least you never get to... In the Sentai, she rides around on a bicycle, which flies.
That would have been hilarious, right? And way more interesting than what we got. Like, when she kidnapped the Rangers' parrots. That was smart. She'd been spying on them for months. She could have done this in, like, episode 5.
Well, I when I reviewed... the invisibility episode.
Dark Warrior.
Yeah. Or is it... No, it's switch. It was switching places, sorry.
Yeah.
And Squat goes into Billy's house. I'm like, you have access to the houses. Just kill them in their sleep.
Exactly. Thank you. Coup de grace them. Like, why are you waiting? It's like, they're not going to morph when they're sleeping, you know.
Like, you could have argued...
Bombs on their house.
Right. What could have worked is if there was at least like an in-canon explanation of why she can't get them at the house. Like,
yeah.
Maybe because like Zordon's energy protects them at home when they're asleep.
Yeah.
Because we know she can't get into the command center. Like there were things that like could have just except like
when they do.
Right. That happens later though. Like teeny weeny little bits of dialogue that like could have made a whole huge difference.
But that's yeah. Kind of the thing with Power Rangers, though, is so many things that could be explained by single lines of throwaway dialogue that never happen.
Never.
Now, what do happen to the Zeo powers?
Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, go on, Brian.
Like, I don't know. After a while, like, watching these episodes back-to-back and, you know, watching Rita, like, just... come up with ideas. I kind of started coming up with like a formula for it where basically she's spying on them. Like, I swear to God, like I had this fever dream where like they were bowling, which I know they were at a bowling alley in the pilot, but like I had this fever dream where they were like at a bowling alley for some like birthday party. And then like, it just cuts to her. She's like, bowling, huh? I don't really bowl them over. Finster, where's my bowling ball monster? It's like, come in, my queen. You know, it's like, you're like, you know, that's kind of how it works. It's like, oh, they're playing baseball. Oh, where's my baseball monster? You know, it, like
the greatest one was the football one because that was the Jew Ranger 1.5 footage.
Yeah,
with the football, and that was kind of like hilarious because like, you know, American football isn't big over in Japan like the way soccer, which is known as football everywhere else in the world except for in this country.
Yeah,
you know,
foot and a ball.
Yeah.
American football makes no sense as a title, okay? Like, you don't even kick it all the time. It's dumb.
And it's not a ball. It's an egg.
Right. It's like in the freaking code. I love
it's
how
it's American
is, like,
hand egg.
Yeah.
And, you know, funny enough, the two, you know, naturalized American citizens having this conversation with the Americans. Like,
But the thing is, though, is that I openly call the NFL American football because it ain't real football.
Anyway, so
moving on.
But here's my thing about Rita, right?
Yep.
If she's not a villain, right? She's really just petty.
Yeah. She's a nuisance. Like,
90% of the time, her plans aren't about world domination. She just wants to ruin the Rangers' day.
Chaotic neutral. Chaotic neutral. Like, I don't know.
Which no one else is allowed to have fun but me.
Yeah.
And she's got this like quirky aunt thing going on, which I love. Like this eccentric grandmother thing. I just love it. She's not a great villain. She might be the best character in the season.
Probably.
Outside of Bulk and Skull.
Which I'm glad that you bring that up, Ben. Because let's talk about Bulk and Skull, and I have to pose only one question to everybody when it comes to Bulk and Skull.
Who are the real bullies?
Damn right. Who are the real bullies here? Like, seriously, like, okay, sure, Bulk and Skull, they have their moments where they do bully people, like in Peace, Love, and Woe, or one of those other episodes where they actually shake Billy down for his change out of his pockets and they throw him in the trash can and stuff like that. But other than that, it's really Bulk and Skull getting embarrassed a lot. So who's the real bullies here?
There are, like, moments, and again, this goes back to what I said earlier about, like, how one line of dialogue could have saved everything. Like, in the episode where Jason and Tommy are teaching a self-defense class, which kudos 90s PSA on women's self-defense. But anyway, there's a moment where, like, Bulk and Skull come in to, like, oh, we want to learn self-defense and, like, meet chicks. Like, all you could have said was, like, this is literally a class for moms. But the Rangers don't do that. They just, like, let him embarrass themselves. And they do this a lot to the point where it's unnecessary. And, like, I think this is something that when you and I were talking about Turbo, I said that we see Bulk and Skull actually end up befriending the new team of Rangers, where they do see them as bumblers and not bullies or jerks. Like the greatest character development in Power Rangers history is Bulk and Skull.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
They are, I think, looking back on it, they did start off as bullies and bully adjacent. And had the Rangers actually, like, decided to become friends with them, when we, like, see them do so much for other people, it could have solved some problems.
They do in a way. I mean, there's the moment, the prom moment, where Kim and Skull have that conversation. And Skull's sitting there really, like, dejected and everything. And Kim goes over and sits down and is like, hey. And she ends up dancing with him.
Yeah.
Here's my genuine belief. Bulk and Skull are the only two actual human beings in Power Rangers. They're the only two fully formed characters in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah.
They have different facets to their personalities. They have different things they're interested in. They evolve. They change. Their personalities aren't what defines them. They make mistakes. They own up to them. They get better. They are the only act. Everyone else in the show is either a stereotype or a facet of human activity turned up to 11. Bulk and Skull are fully rounded characters.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they are the only ones in the show.
And not only that, but some of the other things that you notice is that as you get later into the season, you can also start seeing that transition a little bit for them as well. Because, like, especially when they start encountering the monsters themselves later in the season, that starts to change their focus on things in a way. And, you know, that's why, like, when we get into season 2, their whole thing is going to be, like, trying to expose who the Power Rangers are and stuff like that.
And just watch Foul Play in the Sky.
Yeah.
There's also Doomsday, which has, you know, the Power Rangers being honored and it's Power Rangers Day. And Bulk and Skull show up dressed as superheroes. Mm-hmm. And I think I think it's one of those things where, like, you get to high school and you're the awkward kids and you get sidelined. And so you become the bullies because you don't want to get hurt, where at heart you just want to have friends and you want to be the hero of your own story. And I think that's where part of the journey for Bulk and Skull is.
There's that one episode where they share a dream. And what do they dream of being? They dream of being heroes. They dream of saving the town. They can't pilot the Megazord, but they do their best. Right? Like, Bulk and Skull, for me, are the only complete human beings on the show.
And
you can name any other character, and I can point out that it's just a facet of human personality turned up to 11.
Yeah, and one of the other things, and we obviously didn't talk a lot about it in the episodes, is that one of the things that the comics has done has also kind of helped, like we talked about with Finster, how the comics helped really develop the Finster character and made you actually also more sympathetic.
Can we not talk about the comics?
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be I'm not sure what word is appropriate for a PG show here.
We could go with jerk.
Jerk. There we go. Yeah. But it's not content that everyone has access to, so it shouldn't be considered lore. In my opinion, it's like why Soul of the Dragon is questionable for me. Like I've never read any of the comic books, so it's like, if there's information in the comic books I need to understand something that happened in the show, that shouldn't be considered, in my opinion.
I consider the comic books their own universe.
Yeah.
Brian, what are your thoughts on Bulk and Skull? Brian?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
The other person called Brian.
My thoughts
on Bulk and Skull.
Sorry, my computer kind of. So rewatching these episodes, I at first kind of was just like, oh God, Bulk and Skull. I forgot it. Cause the thing is, when I watched Power Rangers, and this is even me as a kid, I was not wanting to watch the Bulk and Skull show. I was wanting to watch the giant robot and the people in spandex, you know, beat the monster of the week show. So for me, Bulk and Skull were always kind of like, I was never a huge fan of them. I got to meet both of them at Power Morphicon like 4 years ago, and they're perfectly awesome dudes. But Bulk and Skull were always kind of like this thing for me. But then as I went back and watched it, as time went on, they did start to grow on me again. And I think also just in conversation with Mike as we were doing episodes and, you know, kind of like realizing, yeah, they're the ones being bullied. They're not the bullies. I started feeling bad for them. I especially feel bad for Skull, because Bulk. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing: Bulk is very much like his own. Like he's the delusional guy who's just like, I'm the greatest at this. I'm the greatest at that. And he would like I think there was an episode where like I think the Rangers are gonna go scuba diving or fishing or something, and like Bulk just shows up out of nowhere, almost like he was spying them on them all morning with all this fishing gear, and like, I'm the greatest fisher ever. I'm like, do you have nothing better to do with your life? You know, but Skull just gets wrapped up in all this stuff. And like, I feel so bad for him, because not only is Skull the one that's like enabling Bulk, almost like by force, he's being forced to do that. But then he's also the one getting in trouble with Bulk and having to, you know, go to detention, even though he's not really doing anything wrong.
Well, here's the thing.
He's being forced.
Would you really?
He's along for the ride.
Would you really? I see it kind of the flip way. About who the enabler is between Bulk and Skull. I see Bulk being more the enabler to why Skull is acting the way he does, because Bulk is like the leader of the two, whereas Skull is more of the follower. And this is the thing I was going to bring up real quick about the comics. You find out that apparently Skull and Billy were best friends throughout school. Before they hit high school.
Issue number, please, immediately.
It's in GoGo. It's in GoGo Power Rangers.
It's in like the first volume of GoGo. I just read that as well. And if you want, I can like let you borrow.
Yeah, we'll let you borrow it because we have them. But apparently, once they get into high school, that's where the transition starts. Or before they even get to high school, that's where the transition starts, and that's when Skull hooks up with Bulk.
Which is very common. That's actually a very common thing to happen.
Yeah, it does happen. Like, people just kind of grew apart or something like that.
Here's what I will say to that. I think you're both right on who the enabler is. I think it just depends on the episode.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There are times where Skull exists to bulk up Bulk, for lack of another term. And there are times where Bulk is supporting Skull, like when Skull goes on the game show and he's like bumbling and Bulk helps him out. And there you know, there are times where they do things that are dumb and stupid, but there are also times where they help each other out.
Yeah.
They both gas each other up.
It's not in this season. It's not in this season, but Bulk and Skull have the most human moment in Power Rangers.
Yeah.
And it's the moment when Skull plays the piano. Basically, Skull reveals that he's the master of, he plays classical piano. And he's like, and Adam finds out that it's him. And he's like, why haven't you shown anyone? He's like, because everyone will make fun of me. And he's like, no, they won't. And but what about Bulk? And they'd be like, if Bulk's truly your friend, he'll support you. And Bulk goes from hating classical music to loving it the moment he knows his friend's good at it. Like, the moment. I don't like their slapstick shtick. I find it really boring very quickly. Yeah. But as characters, hashtag friendship goals, man. Like,
oh my God, seriously.
Yep. They are ride or die. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the only actual people in Power Rangers.
Fair.
Yeah. All right.
And
so,
I'm sure as the seasons go on, we'll talk about their development, and we'll, especially when we get to In Space, right? Like,
So next up we have, what were your top five episodes of season one? Mm-hmm. Ben's giggling.
All right, I'll go first, I guess. Number five, Cleanup Crew.
Okay.
Mainly because it is the prototypical Power Rangers episode. This is the formula. Look at it. There's the heavy moral of the week things. There's this goes here. Rita makes a monster that has something to do with what the Power Rangers are doing, but it doesn't actually have anything to do with what the Power Rangers are doing. There's just a couple of lines that say it is. And then they have a Megazord fight, and that's the end, basically. Number four for me is Food Fight, because it's probably the episode most people remember the most, because Pudgy Pig. It's that moment that when people picture Power Rangers, they picture Pudgy Pig. They picture the pig eating the power weapons, and then them feeding it spicy food to make it vomit them back up. Like that, the Pudgy Pig episode is the number three for me is Foul Play in the Sky. Mainly because, as I say, Bulk and Skull, man. The humanity that Bulk and Skull show there, where Bulk's just sitting there nerding out about planes because he wants to be a pilot, and Skull's like, "Yeah, dude, I'm with you." They're just being human, and it's the best thing about the episode, and it is great. Number two is Oyster Stew, which is the very last episode of the season, and the reason why it's number two is because it means season one is over.
Literally the only reason.
And number one is Green Candle, because hashtag screw Tommy Oliver. Get out of here, Tommy. Never come back.
Sasha.
All right, I guess I'll go next. So I kind of went the exact opposite direction to Ben, in the sense that, like, I told all of the filler episodes to take a hike, by and large. At number five, I do have High Five. I really like that. Again, it's a bias because I really love Trini, but it's the second episode of the show, and it does, I think, show a lot of what we come to see in Power Rangers, not just the formulaic elements, but the Rangers as characters having to overcome certain challenges, whether that's, you know, being afraid of heights or having to sacrifice things like winning a game show or, you know, having a job or school or whatever.
Do they know?
Not this season, but in general.
Do they know?
Ed Cage, yeah. Like in Dino Thunder, there's a whole thing where Connor gets the opportunity to play for like a pro soccer team. Like,
But he's also still in high school.
Yeah, but details. Yeah. But you know, are still things. It happens. It does happen. So there are some things that have to be sacrificed. We see it rarely, but it does happen. I don't really have these numbered. I just wrote down episodes. I would say from there, Day of the Dumpster should be on the top five list because it is arguably one of the most memorable, like, single episodes. It did start everything off, and everybody quotes parts from it. Everybody makes fun of the "send me five teenagers with attitude" thing. And it's fun because you're not quite like, I remember watching the first episode as a kid and having like no clue what's going on, but I could not, like, I was glued to the television. I really, from the episodes that I reviewed, I actually really enjoyed Doomsday Part 1 and 2. I thought it was a great episode. I liked the idea. I really like when we actually see the world around the Power Rangers, not just the Power Rangers world. It was great seeing them interact with everybody and like all the little kids debating like which Power Ranger is the coolest was like super cute. Because we just had the same argument and we're adults. Return of an Old Friend, I think, is solid, and I would argue this should have been the finale. In some ways, I'm not completely sold on that idea, but it's one that really stuck out to me because they do establish in other parts that, like, Tommy having his powers, Tommy not having his powers is such a huge thing throughout the season. And since there's no episode where they defeat the villain, something that is, like, impactful should have been a good finale for the season to carry over into next season. And Ben and I agree here. Green Candle,
Ben is just violently shaking his head in agreement.
Thank you. And I will say Green Candle is a fantastic episode. And yeah, that is where my rankings end.
Brian?
Just to piggyback, I completely agree. As much fun as I did putting Oyster Stew at number two because it was the end of season one, which means season two could start, I do agree that the season needed a finale, which it didn't get. But that's because it just kind of ran into one long... There was no break between the seasons, really.
Yeah. True.
It's just kind of a place where the DVD ends.
And I also find it interesting that you bring up Doomsday, Sasha, and Ben brought up Cleanup Crew, because it's interesting that Cleanup Crew was like two episodes before Doomsday, when it should have actually been the episode after Doomsday, because it actually would have made a lot of sense to go, hey, we just had this big rally to celebrate the Power Rangers, and then the very next episode you do Cleanup Crew, and because now the Rangers are cleaning up after everyone who was just celebrating them. It would have made so much more sense, but what's continuity?
And also would have been hilarious as just like, look at how praised they are, and are they cleaning up after themselves?
Yeah. Brian?
Brian, what you got?
Oh, man, we got to get the Zords to clean up this ticker tape parade. number five for me is Calamity Kimberly. I love that, you know, and this is one of those episodes kind of like Food Fight where I think of this as like an iconic episode, because I will always remember Kimberly in that jar looking up like, let me go. Like, it's just imprinted in my brain for one reason or another. You know, her getting captured by the samurai fan man, and there's like an awesome, you know, Dragon Zord fight in there as well. Also, it's kind of funny too, because like, you know, you get to see just how bad the editing can be on a Power Rangers episode sometimes, to the point where like you see, like, during the Japanese fight, you see these bikes, and you're like, what are those? And like, you don't find out until like you watch Zero Rangers, like, oh, that's what the civilian Rangers are driving around on. But we never got those in the States, which kind of sucks. But I thought that episode was pretty cool.
Although, didn't we get that didn't we get that though as actual merchandise though over here in the United States?
No, we didn't. We got the shark. We got the shark cycles.
We got the shark cycles. That's later. What it was. I thought we had gotten one of those at least.
Which I think were Kaku Ranger.
Yeah.
Yeah. So number four for me is going to be Day of the Dumpster. Part nostalgia, sure, but also, you know, having watched this and then watching Z-Ranger episode 1 and 2, which is the birth slash the revival, you get to comparing the two. This episode, like, it shows how you can introduce a concept in 30 minutes and still, like, get a kid's attention. Obviously, Sentai had been running for, like, 15 years prior, so, like, in those episodes, you don't see any Zords, you don't see the weapons, you don't see any of that, and as a matter of fact, Red doesn't morph until, like, the last 5 minutes of the episode, which is fine. But here, it's like, hey, you know, we're going to drop you off in the command center. Here's all these things, you know, here's a Zord, go fight, you know, have fun. And they introduce all these concepts and they do it in such a way that, like, I certainly, like, my eyes were glued to the TV and going like, okay, I need to see the next episode of this now. And I had class, like, literally right after that episode aired. And that was, I remember that day in class going like, okay, I need episode 2. I need, like, I was jonesing for it.
I like how you just started scratching your beard. Like,
I was like, I need it. Y'all got any more than Power Ranger episodes? You know, and yeah, it just shows me, like, you know, how it, for me, it was like, yeah, this is how you do a first episode. Number three, The Yolks on You, just because I had so much fun reviewing that episode, you know, just, you know, with the whole Goonie Bird eggs. And I loved Fang as a character. I loved he was driven by a need for eggs. I love that he wasn't like a Rita monster either. He was just this, you know, anomaly. But then, like, Squat and Baby were like, hey, let's use that guy. I also love how different the source material can be from a Power Rangers episode, because I'm not going to get into it, but, like, this character in Japan had such a tragic story, and they, you know, they completely ignored that, and they were like, let's turn him into this, like, Lon Chaney-sounding, you know, guy who's just like, I need my Goonie Bird eggs. And, it was a fun episode. I thought it was a pretty solid episode. And again, it was one of the first ones I reviewed with Mike, and I just had a lot of fun with it. So, number two, Something's Fishy. This is a classic, you know, Ranger has to grow as a person to beat the Monster of the Week episode. I thought it was ridiculous that Billy was afraid of fish because one bit him on the finger as a kid. But, you know, it's a storyline. It gave character to Billy where there was none. And also, Bulk and Skull are at their peak moronic here, which I loved. And then I think number one, my favorite one, it's got to be Life's a Masquerade, because the Frankenstein monster was just so extra. You know, and the whole reason the episode works is because it's a Halloween episode. If he had just been walking around, you know, let's say in June, the episode wouldn't have worked. But because it's Halloween and there's a party going on, you know, everybody sees this guy who's running around trying to, like, cause harm and going, that's an awesome costume. And also,
I think at one point, like, one of the random supporting characters in that episode or extras just went up to him and said, let's dance, you know?
Yeah.
With the Frankenstein monster.
And, like, he's going like, arr! And he's, like, trying to hit her, but she's, like, ducking and going like, yeah, you got some moves. like, Bulk and Skull do, like, an Elvis thing, too, in this episode, which I loved. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I could see that the guys playing Bulk and Skull at that point were talented, which was why I was like, okay, I love this. But probably my favorite thing in any, like, Megazord fight was this Frankenstein pulling out his bolts and, like, swinging them around like nunchucks or something, and, like, throwing them and, like just being like, you know, it was awesome. I thought it was one of the more creative fights personally. So that was my number one for this. Yeah. I'm sure I could have had some other episodes in there, sure, but that was just kind of based on what I thought was awesome.
So for me, my number five is Peace, Love, and Woe. I actually, despite the flaw on how Madame Woe works for Rita, I kind of forgive that a little bit, because I actually like the fact that it actually forces the Rangers as a team to actually have to combine their powers so that way one can utilize it to get out of the dimension and fight the monster, fight Madame Woe. It's also one of Billy's many love interest episodes this season as well. But I think this is the more impactful one for him a little bit. I felt that this one had more merit than some of the other ones that he had. Number four for me is Trick or Treat, because this is like, you know, as Sasha brought up about one, this is one where, you know, both Kim and Tommy had to sacrifice potentially like winning a new car or winning a karate competition to maintain, you know, because of their duties as a Power Ranger. It's that, you know, the deciding what's more important, saving the world or, you know, or like a game show or something. And it's a kind of a good lesson, because you have to kind of, because it tells you like what you need to prioritize. And that's something as we as adults, you know, we have to do that a lot. We have to prioritize what's more important than the other at times. I have no clowning around on my list. I know this is like a filler episode. This is also a Trini episode that has like her niece, Sylvia. I always thought that this episode was a very interesting episode to me. I always thought the idea of Rita creating like a fair as a setup to try to get the Rangers was kind of a cool concept, because it's like she actually went out of this way to create this thing. And the fact that you had the monster disguised as a clown and he's trying to lure the Rangers away to try to turn him into cardboard. Like, I just like the entire overall concept of this episode, because it was like a different way of doing it from your standard, you know, theme and from your standard, what was it? You know, oh, this is what the Rangers are doing. And then, oh, Rita spies on him and goes, oh, I want this monster. Then you go for the motions. It's a different concept. Food Fight, obviously, possibly one of the most, one of the more iconic episodes. Don't need to say any more about it. That's already been said. And then I have Power Ranger Punks. I actually really enjoyed this episode. I love, and this is something, you know, and this is why switching places isn't on the list, is because it's one or the other, because it's the whole, you know, David Yost, Amy Jo Johnson doing kind of the overacting, and, you know,
and boy, are they ever good at it.
Yeah. And, and not only that, but I, you know, and we'll see this in season two, especially with Amy Jo Johnson for that one specific episode with Lord Zedd. Like, this, you have to admit, there are times where it just, even if it's really cheesy and it's really overacted and stuff, it still works, and it lasts that, it leaves that impression on you. And that's why I like that.
So I actually was rewatching Switching Places yesterday, and one of the things I had wished was that this episode had actually been filmed and aired later in the season, mostly because I think that by that point, the two actors would have gotten a better feel for each other's style and had been slightly better at acting like each other. And not to say that they didn't have amazing moments with, you know, David Yost acting as Amy Jo Johnson as Kimberly in Billy's body and the other way around. But there were times where it felt like they weren't quite sure what to do in that role. And I think had this episode been a filler later on, it would have given them like more to work with. But I enjoyed that episode too.
Now, I'm the one that reviewed it initially for the show. I just think it was kind of pointless, because the whole point of like Freaky Friday episodes is to show someone else's point of view, right? But Billy and Kim don't really see things differently. They're friends already. They get along. The only thing that's different is Billy doesn't know how to put makeup on and Kim doesn't know how to cook a souffle.
Yeah, and doesn't know how to work a computer. But I would say that I think the
like if they switched like if they switched Skull and Kim
or that would be Bulk funny.
And Billy,
I would also argue that maybe it shouldn't have been like a Freaky Friday episode. What would have been cool is if, like, you know, Billy was working on this like mind reading machine or whatever, and Rita decided to, like, you know, mess with the Rangers' powers. Because, you know, different weapons, different arsenal, and had them switch places that way. That would have been, I think, fun. I have seen a lot of, you know, characters pretending to be someone else, like an actor playing another actor pretending to be a character. Like in Grimm, for example, which is one of my all-time favorite shows, there was like a reason, like a specific reason behind it. And it was like, by the time it happened, you know, both actors knew that each other's characters really well and knew each other's mannerisms. And it just, it would have been a little bit more fun if it didn't result to the cliches. But hey, it's the 90s.
Yeah. Yep. And then I also want to throw an honorable mention out the Foul Play in the Sky specifically for the monster. Snizzard is like one of the coolest monsters I've saw as a kid. And then I didn't realize it until I got older, but like how he graphically eats Billy and Jason.
He doesn't though.
It okay, graphic is probably not the best term, but
visually.
Like, how visual.
He doesn't though, because he just vomits snakes on them.
No, because remember when Kim and Billy, after they morph into action to Kim gets back.
You're thinking of a different monster, mate.
Thinking a different monster. Oh, okay.
I literally just finished watching Foul Play in the Sky for the review.
I'm trying to remember.
Kim spends 90% of the time in a plane up in the roof. Yeah. She literally appears, shoots the monster in the fight.
Oh no, that's probably Power Ranger Punks. My bad. I'm brain farting. That might be the monster.
It's a lot of episodes to keep track of.
There's 60 episodes in season one.
One thing to point out is when Mike gave us the assignment to come up with the top five episodes, he told us we weren't allowed to include Green with Evil.
Yes.
Which is why I'm not sure any of us did.
Yeah. Well, and that's the reason why, because Green with Evil is the highest regarded episodes of season one. Some may say of Power Rangers in general. That's another debate for another day. But yeah, I wanted to keep Green with Evil out of it because I knew that, you know, you could easily just have your top five just be all five episodes or something like that.
Because it's a Tommy story and therefore they tried.
Yeah. So that's why.
So true.
Because let's be honest, Green with Evil, it's the highest rated episode. It's the highest talked about episodes. So we kind of knew how popular those episodes would have been. So
yeah,
you didn't need us to put it in a top five to explain that one.
Yeah. I think it's, so looking back on it now, having seen so many other seasons of Power Rangers, oh my God, so many seasons. I still think it should be relatively highly regarded. It's a solidly written arc. I don't know. I think there were other, you know, later down the line, I think we get more interesting, in my opinion, characters that had better arcs of like being a bad guy, turning good guy. I think the way it was handled with what's his face, and the way it was handled in Dino Thunder with Trent was really good. I think it could have been a little bit better if it was a little bit more tight in terms of like the progression. If
only Trent's actor put some effort in.
Yeah, but
you ever hear that dude morph? It's just like he's asleep.
We'll have to agree to disagree on that one. But
the others are like Dino Thunder, yeah, and he's like
White Ranger, Thunder, Dino Power,
White Power, yeah, sure. That
like that. By the way,
I just said, careful what you say, by the way, because you just said White Power. I was like, ugh.
Basically says
it's white ranger. White Ranger Dino Power.
Dino Power, yeah.
So I, you know, and then you also have like the Zenaku storyline in Wild Force, which, like I said, like, so there has been other things that I think were more interesting, but this is definitely the one that inspired the others. So it's solid. Like Ben said, they cared.
Yeah. Like, and I say that flippantly, but it genuinely, because Tommy is the heart of many of the two-parters, it just seems that when it comes to Tommy Oliver stuff, the writers were trying harder. That's just how it appears.
It's like they were writing all the filler episodes just to get to the next Tommy-parter.
That's how it feels.
Yeah.
Now there's something to be said for the fact that, like, I made the joke when I first reviewed my first review episode, that it's like okay, you could have made this season like 16 episodes if you cut out all the filler, right?
Oh.
Yeah. You literally could have. You could have done like Day of the Dumpster, 2 filler episodes, Green with Evil, 2 filler episodes, Green Candle, 2 filler episodes, Doomsday, 2 filler episodes, Return of an Old Friend, end of the season. Right? And the only reason you need those 2 filler episodes is because if you don't have a status quo, when you change it, it doesn't feel right. Right? So you technically could have made the season like 11 or 12 episodes if you took out all of the filler.
Yeah.
Think about that. For a 60-episode season, there is a reason that I titled this The Broken Rambling Mess That Kickstarted a Phenomenon.
You know, it is amazing looking back on it, like, how much it resonated with kids to the point where, like, you know, L.A. Traffic at one point, I think it was, like, during season 2 or something, like, there was, like, I think the Power Rangers were going to have some kind of appearance somewhere, and all traffic in L.A. just, like, stopped. Like, you could not move. But it's interesting. Like, it's also really awesome that, you know, it's off a concept that started in Japan that made its way to America and then made its way everywhere else. To the point where, like, you know, I'm going to keep saying it. Like, I watched Power Rangers as a kid in Russia on a tiny television, and it was, like, something so different and so cool that, like, you know, everybody wanted to be a teenager with attitude.
And shaking his head no. But one of the interesting things, though, is also the
I've got to reply to that.
Okay,
go. I hated the Power Rangers as a kid. I hated them. Because I watched the show and I went, those aren't real people. For a start,
how old were you?
I was, 93. I would have been 12, 13.
That's
I would
why.
Have been I would have been a teenager.
That's why. I think it's because the show, and we see this in later seasons, that there's certain seasons that are geared towards 15,
93.
All right. So you have like certain seasons that are geared towards certain age groups.
Yeah.
So something like Time Force, like RPM, like in space, is geared towards a slightly older audience, especially within space, because it, you know, because Power Ranger fans were growing with the show.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying that isn't what their target audience was. But what I'm saying is, how do I explain it?
No, I mean, I get what you're saying. When you watch it as a teenager versus when you watch it as a kid, it gives you a different impression. And there's nothing
because especially like these are teenagers. And I'm sitting there going, that doesn't represent me at all.
Like, I remember having a very, like, even as a kid who had no concept of what American high school was like, even then I was like, wow, these kids do a lot.
Yeah. I can tell you right now, when I was in high school, I did not belong to nearly this many clubs and or sports teams. Like,
seriously.
Well, like, I mean, keep talking. I want to find a specific note I once wrote.
Okay.
Yeah, I got my notes in front of me. I mean, like, in high school, I mean, the only thing that I did in high school was, like, you know, I played on the ice hockey team. But I only did that for one full school year and a half of my senior year. You know, I mean, I played ice hockey for another team outside of school. But, like, yeah, I mean, I didn't do a whole lot in high school. I wasn't that kid.
Here we go. Oh,
Ben found his note.
This is in the episode Plague of the Mantis, right? And there's a moment in that where Trini is been given homework by her kung fu master. And Kim says, wow, double duty, math and kung fu homework. And my note was, as I've pointed out before, the Rangers pull way more than quote unquote double duty. School, homework, charity work, sports, learning martial arts, teaching martial arts, hanging out at the juice bar, eating, sleeping. Oh, and yeah, defending the earth. And that's just in the last 3 episodes.
And they're always organizing some kind of, like, save the planet thing, too. Yeah.
Always. Plant the trees. Renewable save energy the, episodes.
Save the lion statue. You know, it's like
burying a time capsule. These are kids that know their bubble. Civics.
And I mean, it was funny because like we got to a point where like they've taken on so many things, and then we get to the football episode, and like
that made like, no sense whatsoever.
All of the dude Rangers are on the football team, including Billy, which makes no sense whatsoever. And so I'm like, okay. Man,
have you seen that dude with his shirt off?
Whew. I mean, yeah, but
he's more built than Zach is.
I mean,
I'm
okay.
Just saying. He's supposed to be the nerd.
Right, but like, think about it though. The everybody else has been like doing martial arts to some extent, or hip hop, aikido, or whatever, for years. Yeah. Billy literally just got jacked over. I'm pretty sure he just got jacked over the course of the season.
Well, actually,
I'm pretty sure he just invented a steroid.
No, so the thing is, and obviously Brian and I can talk about this because we've been to enough Power Ranger panels, especially involving David Yost. Is that when they were doing the auditions for Power Rangers, they brought in three people who knew martial arts, and in Zach's case, also knew how to dance. And that's how you got Tui Trang, Austin St. John, and Walter Jones. For the other two Rangers, what they did was they actually went out and got gymnasts, which is what David Yost and Amy Jo Johnson were.
I mean, you can tell that because Kim's got one fighting pose.
Yeah. And
But, like, I'm not talking about, like, the behind the scenes. I just meant in canon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, I don't know. But that, oh, yeah, definitely.
Or is it like Spider-Man, where when you get the Power Rangers powers, you also become get abs? Jack.
Yeah. I'm fine.
Be Power Ranger, become Swole.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, that's what happened in this first Sam Raimi Spider-Man film. He got superpowers.
That's what I mean. That's
abs.
What I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, I don't have to wear glasses anymore because of spider powers. Yay. That must be nice.
As three of us are wearing glasses.
Yeah.
A minor right here.
Yeah. So, but no, I definitely think that, we can all agree on this, is that the biggest thing is that when they did this show, they and Sasha brought it up with the whole appearance in LA thing, stopping traffic. You just didn't know at the time, you know, what impact this show was going to have. They may have had it where it was only going to be like a 30 episode run, and then it got so huge at the very beginning.
It was 40, right?
It was 40.
Or 40 episodes. Yeah, and then they commissioned the other 20. Yeah. So it's like they originally had that 40 episode run, and then they're like, oh, we got to add 20 more episodes because this show is so huge. And then, like, as we're going to find out when we start talking about season two, they did the season two premiere like a month after season one ended. And then another like month or two later, that's when they went into full season two mode.
Mm-hmm. So it's a three, they literally did a three parter over the summer to kind of like appease fans. And then they went into season two.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it's funny that you bring up the whole like LA thing. Cause like, I think they were going to do like a live show at like Universal or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And it was literally just the actors going to be there like dressed up in the suits or whatever. And Tommy had that, you know, like not even like the good shield. He had the flimsy shield. I think that was, cause I remember seeing that on the news as a kid when I was living in Denver. And I knew at that point, cause like, I think the only thing by the time, like, the only kind of frame of reference I had for any kind of franchise being nearly as big as that was, like, Ninja Turtles, you know? Like, Ninja Turtles was the thing back in, like, the early 90s, and then all of a sudden Power Rangers came around. It was like, nobody was talking about, you know, Ninja Turtles at school anymore. It was like...
Yeah, you know, yeah, because, like...
And I hear who.
Because, like, here's the thing, like, for you and I, Brian, like, we're both the day oneers.
Yes.
You know, we're the both that were there August 23rd, 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And like I, you know, I was watching the TMNT animated series just like you were beforehand, and you know, I was also watching like Heathcliff and Garfield and Friends. So
fun fact,
yeah,
it wasn't called TMNT in England.
Yes, I know it was Teenage Mutant Alien Turtles.
No. Hero Turtles.
Heroes.
And yeah. they had to forcibly edit any images of Michelangelo's nunchucks out of the show.
Which yeah. was stupid.
Why? Because they were too violent. But it was perfectly okay for Leonardo to have swords.
But you want to know something interesting, though? I'm glad that you brought that up because the interesting thing is that because I actually collected the trading cards when the show was going on, over here in the States, we actually got it with the UK title. Yeah. And the Awesome Con, when they had Kevin Eastman in the full voice cast for Turtles, I actually showed the card to Kevin Eastman and to the four voice actors, like Rob Paulsen and them. And they're like, we didn't know this until now. And
wow.
Because it's an actual thing. And Kevin Eastman looked at it. He took a picture of the card and was like, I did not know this. And he took a picture of the card with the UK title on it.
So, fun fact, in Russia, it also didn't have the full title. They just called him Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back on the Power Rangers podcast.
Right. Yes. So, in terms of Power Rangers and the hype, I think it was like
we won't be talking about the Turtles till in space, okay?
Yeah.
That's next mutation, though. So, it sucks.
Anyway, so for me, it was like one of the first live action, like, kid shows that I remember watching. Like, there was stuff that I would watch with my parents, like Murder, She Wrote. But
what show? Angela Lansbury, anyway, get it.
Queen. But anyway, the amount of people she murdered, though, Jesus. Anyway, it was, you know, Power Rangers was the first, live-action kids show because I grew up on Ninja Turtles. I grew up on X-Men. I grew up on Spider-Man. Basically anything that was imported from America to Russia at that time, I was watching. But I remember, like, I didn't have one of those, like, oh, this is a show that's too violent for you. I think I remember my parents rolling their eyes anytime I told them I needed the TV to watch Power Rangers. But it's amazing how much of an impact this show has. I mean, I would say, like, while it's not quite as known as, like, Star Trek or Doctor Who, in a lot of ways, it's, like, that's what it is for, like, my generation.
Yeah. I used to fake sick to try to get out of school early so I could just watch Power Rangers. I got in trouble a lot for it, but I actually I actually lost out on going to a hockey game because of that. So lesson kind of learned on that one, to stop faking sick to go home to watch Power Rangers.
I don't know. I think it was a very different experience for me, at least.
Well, it had
like I said. I'm only really coming to this cognizantly in the last year or so. But I do remember trying to watch Power Rangers when it was first on and all of that stuff, as I've said. And it was a very different experience for me there because 90% of our shows were live action in the UK. We didn't have a whole lot of animation. It was weird. I think we can agree that, like, one of the things that really cemented Power Rangers for a lot of kids was the action, because you'd not seen stuff like that live action before, you know?
Yeah, especially the fact that, like, the moms, like, group and stuff like that was trying to get the show taken down because of
that. Don't get me started on
that. No, I don't mean that. I mean, like, as a kid, when you sit there and you're watching it and you're like, wow, I've never seen someone do a backflip kick to some random monster's head and then it explode before. Right? Like,
yeah.
We'd never seen anything like the unmorphed fighting. Hell, even the morphed fighting in a kid's show before, really.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the other thing is that this was, I believe, either a second or a third attempt for Saban, because he originally was trying to bring something else over. It might have actually been Kamen Rider that he was trying to bring over originally.
Go on.
And the executives didn't, at like Fox and stuff, they didn't grasp for it. So that's when he kind of went back to the drawing board, and that's where he did the thing about Power Rangers. Yeah. And so this was actually like a second attempt. you know, for him to, you know, get a show on Fox Kids. Because he was trying to, he really wanted to try to adapt something from Japan for an American audience.
Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that he was actually a fan of the Sentai, because he would go over to Japan for all these business meetings. And so before that even happened, because I think that, like, Saban was trying to adapt Bioman.
That's what it was, yeah.
It was Bioman, and then I think he was also going to try and adapt Jetman, which was the season right before Zero Ranger. But also, fun fact, Stan Lee from Marvel Comics, not only is the reason why Super Sentai is kind of still a thing right now, because he did the whole Spider-Man show over in Japan and, you know, brought the idea of like a giant robot over there. And then like they went to Battle Fever J from there. And that kind of revived the series after, what was it? Jackia died. But Stan Lee was trying to bring over Sun Vulcan, I think, as a adaptation of, you know, into like Power Rangers. It wouldn't have been called Power Rangers, but this show has been, it's been attempted to be, you know, made into an American version forever.
Yeah.
Even in the first 10 years of Sentai's existence, they were trying to be like, hey, let's put this over in America where, like, you know, kids love comic book heroes. Like, let's see what we can do. And it just never, you know, really, you know, became a thing until Power Rangers happened. Yeah. So,
yeah, because I read the thing about Stan Lee too, because he was trying to bring stuff over. And actually, that was kind of part of the deal of him bringing Spider-Man over to Japan, was to try to bring, you know, the Sentai over to America.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. And I know right now there's a big attempt to, like, make Kamen Rider popular over here. I think they're doing, like, a Heisei Generations thing, but that's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
But
so, with that, it's time to do the wrap for our season one finale of Voices from the Grid. So, with that, let's start off with Sasha. Sasha, where can the people find you on the social medias?
Geekgirl101.tumblr.com. Yes, it's on Tumblr. Yes, you can ask me ridiculous questions. I always answer. And, of course, Geeky Captain on Instagram.
Brian, who is actually underneath me, but I actually might be somebody else on somebody else's screen.
Hello. Yes, hi. You can find me on Twitter at OneDrunkGeek. You can also find me over on the parent company that I podcast with when I'm not with y'all, at www.castwavestudios.com. Be sure to check out Boldly Going Nowhere. We actually have a new episode up. And we actually talk about the possible rumor that Hasbro is splitting with Toei, which we're not going to talk about here, but we do have that in the new episode of BGN. And you can
bear in mind that this episode isn't going to come out until like November, Brian.
Fair enough. So you might have an answer as to what's going on by the time that you, you hear this. So either I'm going to listen to this and like smile, or I'm going to frown. But
yeah.
But yeah, that's where you can find me on the web.
And Ben, where can the people find you on the social media?
All right, Mike, you ready?
Oh, God.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at...
Bob T. Goldfish.
Okay, you can find me at Voices from the Grid sister show at...
TXHDHockey.com/AwesomeMania.
Where Mike and I talk all about the happenings in wrestling every 2 weeks. And you can also find my columns for my various watch throughs of the seasons over at
txhdhockey.com/VFTG.
And I'm going season by season and just kind of documenting my thoughts on each season. Sasha was gracious enough to guest star on the Turbo review. I'm sure that I'm gonna try and get Brian involved in something when I do something, and I'm gonna probably get Mike involved in something because I'm getting to the point where I don't want to write them all on my own because it's getting depressing.
Yeah.
And you can find me at twitch.tv/321_TV doing the streaming of the video games various times of the week. Track me on Twitter for when I go live, basically.
And then you can find me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, and of course everything on the website at txhthockey.com, and of course for the show /VFTG.
Before we go into the actual finale, the round out of season one,
yep,
it would not be an episode of Voices for the Grid with me on it talking about Power Rangers if I didn't say, that's not how science works.
So with that, Ben, good sir, Ben, take us away.
Well, it is tradition at this point that I always end out episodes of everything I do in the same way. And that is to say, guys, gals, and non-aligned pals, in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other and party on non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until you see us next time on another awesome episode, be sure to grab your morphers and
may the power protect you.
Aye, aye, aye!